Brother Paul has asked us to read from Hosea chapter 2, verses 13 through 23. Our brother and sister who shared their testimony was an example of trusting Jesus. How precious is Jesus to you this morning? You know, Elijah went through some real struggles, and I'm sure there's many here this morning who are struggling in different ways. Have you put your trust completely in Jesus? He's available, but we need to cry out to him. Hosea chapter 2, verse 13. And I will visit upon her the days of Balaam, wherein she burned incense to them, and she decked herself with her earrings and her jewels, and she went after her lovers and forgot me, saith the Lord. Therefore, behold, I allure her and bring her into the wilderness and speak comforting unto her. I will give her her vineyards from hence and the valley of Achor from the door of hope. And she shall sing there as in the days of her youth, as in the day when she came up out of the land of Egypt. And it shall be at that day, saith the Lord, that thou shalt call me Isai and shall call me no more Bala. For I will take away the names of Bala and of her mouth, and they shall no more be remembered by their name. And in that day will I make a covenant for them with the beasts of the field, with the fowls of heaven, and with the creeping things of the ground, and will break the bow and sword, the bow and sword and the battle out of the earth, and will make them to lie down safely. And I'll betroth thee unto thee forever. Yea, I will betroth thee unto me in the righteousness and in judgment and loving kindness and in mercies. I will ever betroth thee unto me in faithfulness, and thou shalt know the Lord. And it shall come to pass in that day, I will hear, saith the Lord, I will hear the heavens, and they shall hear the earth, and the earth shall hear the corn and the wine and the oil, and they shall hear Jezreel. And I will sow her unto me in the earth, and I will have mercy upon her that I had not obtained mercy. And I will say to them which were not my people, thou art my people, and they shall say, thou art my God. Let us kneel for prayer.
This morning we want to look at the thought of betrothed in the valley of Achor. Most of us have a degree of familiarity with the book of Hosea, and we know that God asked Hosea to take a lady who was already known as a harlot to be his wife. Her name was Gomer, and she was to have children by her, and this marriage was to represent the spiritual condition of Israel. And so we know this commonly as a fact. But I would like you to think about this morning in relation to how it must have been for Hosea. The scripture tells us that when the word of the Lord came to Hosea, there in the beginning of the book, in fact it says the beginning of the word of the Lord, and it says, go take unto thee a wife of whoredoms and children of whoredoms, for the land hath committed great whoredom, departing from the Lord. And so in his call to the ministry as a prophet, at the beginning of his ministry, he is to go and to marry a prostitute. How do you think he felt in delivering the message of the Lord when that was the beginning of the call? Israel had become an adulterous wife who refused all instruction from the Lord. And they would reject the typical prophet of the Lord. Hosea is a picture of a non-typical prophet, someone who was asked to do something unusual in order to get the people's attention, because the people were regularly in the habit of rejecting the standard or typical teaching of the Lord. And so the Lord would use different means from some particular prophets in order to get the people's attention. The Hebrew writer says, God who at sundry times, that is in many different times, and in divers manners, that's in many different ways, spake in time past unto the fathers by the prophets. And so Hosea would be an example where God used something that was out of the ordinary to get people's attention, and that they would focus on the message that he was trying to deliver. This had to be very difficult for Hosea to begin his ministry by marrying a prostitute. In fact, if most of us would look at this honestly, we would say that if that individual such as Hosea married a prostitute, why should I listen to such a man? And so Hosea's here saying, God told me to marry a whore, someone who's known as a whore, and now I'm here to prophesy, and God is speaking to Israel. And you see, his wife would continue to act out her former lifestyle. Even after she was married, she would continue to be unfaithful. She would bring shame and grief upon his home, his extended family, and his ministry. She would stand as a blot upon his testimony. And in turn for this, he was to love her as his wife. She would spurn his love and continue to seek other lovers. He would care for their children as his very own, knowing that his children would be under suspicion as to whose they truly were. He knew that others would perhaps look at his children and say, are his children truly the heritage of the Lord, or are they just the consequence of sin? Now God would continue to work with his wife, Gomer. He would chasten her for her sins. He would bring her low financially. She would be around the block so many times that no one would want her anymore. And eventually she would run out of money, and she appears in chapter 3 as someone who really worked as a sex slave and now is on the market for sale because she's no longer worth anything. By marital right of law, Ezekiel could have put her away. He had every right to put her away as an unfaithful wife. But he goes there to the auction block. And he buys her back. It says for 15 pieces of silver. Now that might not mean much to us, but we know from Scripture, from Exodus 21:32, it was part of the law that if by accident another man's servant was killed, the value that was to be paid to that owner was 30 pieces of silver. And so here's Gomer being bought back for 15. It shows that in society's eyes, she was worthless. No one wants her. He buys her back. He offers to redeem her, to show her grace, to love her, to offer her reinstatement as a wife if she is willing to be faithful. Imagine the shame that Hosea must have endured as he stood there at the auction block that day. And people would have said to him, after all that she has put you through, you're going to buy her back as someone less than a slave. And you're going to reinstate her as your wife. why don't you just divorce her? She's making a total fool out of you. She shames you and your whole family, and she has been shameless about her own sin. You're going to buy her back. You're going to reinstate her. You're going to take her back into your home. What a fool. I can't imagine how you can still love her after all that she has put you through. You see, Hosea's love was so unusual, so unconditional, so gracious, so enduring, that the people could not help but take notice. And in this way, God got the attention of Israel, but at a tremendous cost to the prophet of God. Does anyone here this morning want to be Hosea? We don't invite that level of pain and suffering and shame into our lives. Typically, we run from it. But Hosea accepted it as God's plan for his life and for his ministry. You see, Hosea and his wife were to be a picture of God's love to backsliders and the extent that he will go to redeem them. Hosea does not run after his wife when she goes a-whoring. After she rejects his pleading, he lets her go. He lets her become impoverished. He does not bail her out and thus enabling her to continue in sin. He waits till she is ready to come back. He waits until she says, I will go and return to my first husband. But in the meantime, he never stops loving her. She pursues sin and runs into walls and thorns and chastisement, poverty, hardship, and eventually becomes sin sick and hopeless, worthless, useless. That's all described in the first part of Hosea chapter 2. And I know that there are a number here this morning that have experienced grief and pain and heartache and shame over loved ones that have gone astray. And you're afraid that they will destroy their lives or maybe never come back, or if they do, they will pay for their sin for the rest of their lives. Or maybe you feel that there's no hope for your marriage. In Hosea, there's a picture of a redeemed marriage. And all of this is a picture of God's plan of redemption. Let's look at it now from that aspect of what God has done for each one of us in salvation. I told you the story of Hosea, and let's see in principle how this unfolds. Initially, in the beginning of chapter 2, it says that she is being driven into the wilderness. It's a picture of isolation and poverty as a result of her sin. She is separated from God's people. She's separated from her home. Her sin has separated her relationship with her husband. But now it says, verse 14, therefore, behold, I will allure her and bring her into the wilderness and speak comfortably unto her. It's the lure of love that's offered to a repentant heart to go into the wilderness. She went into the wilderness as a picture of isolation. Now she's going into the wilderness as a picture of privacy or time alone spent with her husband. And you'll see there's double pictures throughout all of Hosea, and we can't go through all of that. But the children are named or given a specific name, and the name means something at the beginning of their lives. And then their name is given slightly different, and it means something different at the end of their lives. It's a picture of redemption. And so we see here it's the lure of love to a repentant heart or to a repentant prostitute that brings her to her husband out into the wilderness. It's a picture of the power of unconditional love over sensual love. She no longer responds to sensual love. She no longer has lovers. She's come to the end of that lifestyle. And faithful love now lures her back to her husband. The unfaithful woman is lured by faithful love. The wilderness, again, is a picture of a quiet and a solitary place where healing can happen. I believe it's another picture of where he gives her the respect of privacy and does not put her to an open shame. He could put her to an open shame justly. The law would allow it. The law would allow her to be stoned. The wages of sin is death. But he speaks to her privately. He could have much to say about her sin, the grief and the shame that she caused, the hardship to the family, the reproach to his testimony or to his ministry, but it says he speaks comfortably to her. It says he offers her back her vineyard, her place in the home. That's a picture of full reinstatement. Earlier in the chapter, God says, I will take away from her her vineyard. And now in this reinstatement, her vineyard is offered back to her. She is being given grace, unmerited, the offer of full restoration. Where does this happen? It happens in the Valley of Achor, verse 15. I will give her her vineyards from thence, and the Valley of Achor for a door of hope. And so they've gone out into the wilderness, into this Valley of Achor. And again, through the whole book of Hosea, the names are significant. The names of every event, the names of places, the names of the children all have meaning. And so this Valley of Achor has a special meaning. Achor means trouble. God took the woman out into the wilderness to meet with her husband at a place of trouble in order to offer her a door of hope. What's the history of the Valley of Achor? The history of the Valley of Achor is described in Joshua chapter 7. It's where Achan sinned and God's judgment came upon Israel. And they were defeated at Ai. And Joshua, after cleansing the camp and cleansing the sin, talks about God turning away his wrath from the sin of Achan. And it was named the Valley of Achor after that. And so out of the time of deepest distress, or at the place of deepest trouble, God erects a door of hope. She is called into the Valley of Achor. She must face her sin and her condition for what it is. But God is offering to turn away his wrath and give grace. Repentance and the putting away of sin is a picture of the restoration of relationship, of God's wrath being turned away, and he speaks comfortably to her. It's a picture that grace can redeem all that sin has destroyed, and even more, because where sin abounds, grace does much more abound. His love, his grace, his comfort, his restoration causes her to sing. Her restoration is as joyous as the first time conversion or coming out of Egypt. Notice that in verse 15. And she shall sing there as in the days of her youth, as in the days when she came up out of the land of Egypt. When they came out of the land of Egypt and they crossed the Red Sea and they were given a great deliverance and they saw all their taskmasters destroyed by the Red Sea and realized that Egyptians could no more be their taskmasters because they were destroyed. And on the banks of the Red Sea, they sang the song of Moses. And so the picture of the joy here is the picture of love that's restored to the same degree of a young virgin and a young groom coming together in first pure love. For the first time, she realizes that Hosea's love for her surpasses that of all her other lovers. They leave her when she runs out of money, but he comes and buys her back as one who is worthless. And now notice what takes place. Verse 16, "And it shall be at that day, saith the Lord, that thou shalt call me Ishi, and shalt no more call me Baali." And in the one sense, both those words are so similar in meaning, it's hard to distinguish between the two. And yet there is a very clear distinguishment being made that there was one way that you used to refer to me, and now I'm going to use a different word because the connotation is different, or the meaning is different. Even though the words are similar, the context is different. The affection is different. What do these words mean? Ishi literally means husband or man, and literally my husband or my man, but said with affection. And this stands in distinction from Baali, which is my master or my lord, or the idea of rule with no affection. Before, she only knew Hosea as the man of authority in her life. And she rejected that authority. She ran from that authority. She violated that authority. It's a picture of Israel running away from God, in rebellion against God, rejecting God's authority in their life. It's a picture of a rebel heart that is angry at God and His laws and what He requires. You see, a rebel heart, when they come into the presence of God, they only see authority. The reason they can only see authority is because they have rebellion in their heart. They can't see the love of God reaching out. They can't see authority as protection. They only see it as frustration and boundary and rule, and they resent it. But a broken and a contrite heart sees that same individual as a protector and loves it. A broken and a contrite heart sees the difference between loving respect, Ishi, and grudging submission, Baali. And both of them are responses to the same person in authority. Further, let's notice how Hosea restores her. Verse 19 and 20, "And I will betroth thee unto me forever. Yea, I will betroth thee unto me in righteousness and in judgment and in loving kindness and in mercies. I will even betroth thee unto me in faithfulness, and thou shalt know the Lord." And so here again, there's this idea of this, the use of the word betrothal carries with it the idea of a first engagement between two virgins, two people who have kept themselves sexually pure, two people who have reserved themselves for one another. They come together in betrothal. There's commitment even prior to marriage to moral purity. And now we have this term of betrothal being used for the restoration of this wife who's been a prostitute. And it's Hosea who is speaking these words. It is not the one who has done all the offending, but it's the one who has suffered all the offense. Hosea is saying, "I will betroth thee." The term betrothal shows that all the adultery has been removed. There's a new beginning. There's a fresh start with a clean slate. There's no past history that's going to plague this future relationship. You see, if he would enter into that commitment with history still in view, she would be an adulteress. But the fact that he says, "I will betroth thee," indicates that he's letting go of history by the grace of God. He, the faithful one, is pledging to her, the offender, his undying love and commitment. This goes against our carnal nature. Our carnal nature wants to see payment for sin, restitution for all the hurt, a recounting of all the offenses, and a contingency escape for the future. Grace says true repentance is enough for renewed commitment and restored relationship. Now, I don't want you to think that this is offered flippantly. It's not giving us the picture that someone may go out and sin over a period of time and simply come back and say, I'm sorry, and never be held accountable for their sin. In Hosea chapter 3, verse 3, Hosea says, And I said unto her, Thou shalt abide for me many days. In other words, a commitment has been made, and I will honor that commitment. And thou shalt not play the harlot. There's accountability. And thou shalt not be for another man, so will I also be for thee. In other words, I am still committed to you 100%. Relationship can be restored 100% if you are willing for a period of time to prove your faithfulness and your recommitment. You see how accountability, forgiveness, and restoration can all work together, and we cannot separate any of those components to restoration. All this time, his perspective has been one of undying love and commitment, and yet he does not shield her from the consequences of her sin. He always offers the hope for the future. In the valley of Achor, there is a door of hope. He holds that door open to his wife to come back. But it must be coming back under a betrothal, under a commitment, under a renewing of the vows. And in that betrothal, he says, forever. He is offering to her unconditional, faithful love to one who has been faithless. He offers it in righteousness. In other words, it is the right thing to do. By way of law, we would think that the right thing to do is to hold everyone accountable for everything that they have done and make sure they fully pay for all the sins that they've committed. But grace says it's right to forgive. He betroths her in judgment. Judgment speaks of something that is a wise and understanding thing to do. Why is it wise and understanding to forgive someone who has committed all these offenses? Because simply for this reason, no relationship can ever be restored unless the history of it is forgiven. To think that you can ever rebuild a relationship without letting go of the past is a lie from the devil. I will betroth thee in loving kindness. It's a Hebrew word which carries with it the idea of both love and kindness coming together. In spite of wrongs that were committed, I am choosing to act towards you in a way that you do not deserve. It's the Old Testament counterpart to grace. I will betroth you unto me in mercy. I identify with your sin and your shame and feel compassion for your past, but I extend hope for your future. And then finally, he says, in faithfulness. He renews his vows, he renews his commitment to the one who has been offended. He betroths her as a virgin. This tells to me that there is tremendous power in renewing vows, in renewing commitment to the one who doesn't deserve it, because in the extension of grace to someone who does not deserve it, there is power of restoration. Hosea did all this to an adulterous wife to simply show us how God redeems his people from their sin. This means that all of us, in God's eyes, are considered sinners. All of us, in God's eyes are simply Hosea's wife. Hosea, the name means salvation. Hosea is a picture of God's grace to each one of us as sinners. It's a picture of God's love that's never failed in spite of our sin. It's a picture of God's love for us that does not recount the past, does not mark iniquities against us, and can remember our sin no more. You see, if God would not let go of our sin, we could not have close relationship. And so the strength of our relationship is the strength of God's grace coming to us, His making a choice to love us in spite of our unworthiness. It's a picture of future hope and blessing. Grace restores what sin has taken away. Grace can heal and bring again closeness. We see that in verses 20 and 23. How in that relationship, I will be their God and they shall be my people. The same ones who was said initially, they will not be my God, or they will not be my people, and I will not be their God. And now they're restored. Hosea is quoted in Romans chapter 9 as a picture of our salvation. Verse 23, I will have mercy upon her that had not obtained mercy. And I will say to them that were not my people, thou art my people, and they shall say, thou art my God. And so there's a direct link between the Old and the New Testament here as a picture of our salvation. Now looking at some of the details in this family, the marriage to the unfaithful spouse, Gomer. Gomer means complete. And perhaps that alone doesn't mean much to us, but she is the daughter of Diblaim. Diblaim means two lumps that are brought together. And so it's a picture of a complete union that comes between two lumps, and the one is holy and the other is unholy. Hosea is a picture of salvation and saving grace, and Gomer is a complete picture of someone who's completely lost, and these two are brought together in marriage. It's a picture of God, the one who's perfectly holy, being joined to us. Unworthy, on the auction block, useless, worthless, used up by sin, but redeemed. The first son was named Jezreel. And Jezreel has a double meaning. On the one hand, it means that God sows into the wind, or God scatters. The seed that is sown seems as if it has no effect. And that's a picture of Israel's dispersion, Israel's wandering away from God, the wandering sheep in the mountains. But Jezreel also means God sows, or God brings forth His harvest. And in chapter 1:11, it's talking about how they're coming back together, the children of Israel. In verse 23, or chapter 2, verses 22 and 23, Jezreel's used in a different way. And the earth shall hear the corn and the wine and the oil, and thus shall hear Jezreel, or the coming together. In verse 23, and I will sow unto her in the earth. And so God is saying, I'm going to reclaim all the seed that I have sown. And the second child was named Lo-Ruhamah, which means no mercy or not given mercy. But she is renamed Ruhamah, which means someone who's obtaining mercy. And the third child was Lo-Ami, which means not my people or no longer my people. And Ami is who she is now called, Hosea 2 verse 1, which means obtaining mercy or being reinstated back into the family. And so here's a picture for broken families. If there's ever a family that was broken, this is a picture of a broken family. But we see a restored relationship, a restored spouses, and we see restored children. The children suffered all the consequences of the broken relationship, but God restores them. It's a picture of a prodigal son coming back and receiving full restoration. It's a picture of a sheep that's out on a mountain and brought back, and there's great rejoicing. And so Hosea is also a picture of restored relationships. In a personal and a practical application, we ought to look at other people not on the basis of who they are, that's the Valley of Achor, but on the basis of who they could be in the future, that's the Door of Hope. Because God did not look at us on the basis of who we are, but on the basis of who we could become. He is offering to take away our past. He's offering to betroth us to himself. God has done all this for each one of us who've experienced salvation. God chose to love us while we were yet in rebellion against him. He chose to offer us full restoration. We were so far removed from the family that in order to get us back in, he had to adopt us. And now we've been accepted into the beloved, and he's bestowed upon us the riches of his grace. Now I have a question for you. I would like you to think of who, and put a name to it, who is the most difficult person in your life to interact with? Think about it honestly. I think we know who Hosea's was. It was probably Gomer. I don't know who it may be for you, but I want you to put a name to that person. And now, if we were to watch your life and your interaction with that person, the most difficult person in your life, and we were to watch your life unfold, how would it portray the unconditional love of God? You see, that's what God asked Hosea to do. The person whom he loved the most, the person who had hurt him the most, God says, your response to that person will demonstrate my unconditional love. Does God really ask us to do that? Does he really expect us to do that? A new commandment I give unto you, that ye love one another as I have loved you.
Book of Ezra, where they were rebuilding, laying the foundation of the second temple. After they laid the foundation, the older ones that remembered the glory of Solomon's temple began to weep, but the younger ones were rejoicing. And so the sound was a confusion of sounds. There was a weeping for what was lost, and there was a rejoicing for what was being rebuilt. In the book of Haggai, God comments, makes a clear statement about that. He says, who is left among you that saw this house in her first glory? How do you see it now? Is it not in your eyes as comparison of nothing? In other words, Solomon's temple was gone. This rebuilding of fragments was just not impressive. Sort of a picture of what many lives become because of sin. But yet in verse 9, God says this, the glory of this latter house shall be greater than the former, saith the Lord of hosts. In this place will I give peace, saith the Lord of hosts. The point is, amazing grace. There's a reason why that hymn is so popular, because it's so true. The amazing grace of God. I have this belief that the blood of Jesus is so powerful to wash away our sin that we will be better off having been sinners cleansed by the blood than if we had never sinned. Maybe I got it out of place, but that's what I believe. That someone Jesus has redeemed with his blood will be better than if they had never sinned. That sounds too good to be true, but I believe it is true. We can live in the Valley of Achor, or we can live at the door of hope. Let's stand as we close in prayer.